Welcome to On DOD on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. Now, your host, Jared Serbu.
Thanks for listening this week. I'm Jared Serbu. On the program this time, we return to a recurring theme. Change is afoot within the military personnel system this year, at least potentially. Both houses of Congress are taking a serious look at reforming retirement and other benefits. Inside the Defense Department, meanwhile, officials at the highest levels are saying the entire process the military uses to manage talent and service members' careers is in serious need of reform for the first time in 50 years. More on that later in the program from Brad Carson, the Acting Undersecretary of Defense for Personnel and Readiness. But we're going to spend the bulk of this hour on the front end of the military personnel system, the recruiting process. Recruiting chiefs from all four of the DoD services have just returned from an academic conference on recruiting hosted by the Army at Fort Knox, Kentucky. They heard briefings on topics ranging from whether it's time to re-examine the all-volunteer force to how the military recruits its cyber workforce, how the military measures the quality of its recruits, and how it might use what are called biomarkers to predict what career fields an incoming soldier is most likely to succeed in. Our guest for this is Major General Alan Batchelet, the commander of Army Recruiting Command and the host of the conference at Fort Knox. He told me the conference has now turned into a recurring event. The next one is scheduled for December here in Washington.
As this thing evolves, what we've discovered is that maybe it shouldn't have been a discovery, but the Army is placing a lot of emphasis on the human dimension and the human domain. And we realize that if it's going to be a centerpiece for the future development for the Army, that we've got to spend more concerted effort and thought into how we approach not just research, but also the development and management, selection, identification of the people they're going to serve in the Army. Because we recognize that we're competing for talent in a workplace and in academia that where talent is tougher to come by and increasingly more expensive. So that's what these summits were all about. This is the second in what we hope will be an ongoing series. There's probably no end to them if I were to have a vote about it. And we called it Recruiting 2025 to get started. It probably will expand more broadly into a sessions. When people think recruiting, sometimes they think only about the enlisted side of the house, but we also talked about officer accessions and civilian talent accession also. So we want to expand the scope of these interactions beyond just kind of traditional recruiting. So that's sort of where this venue and is headed for the future. We think that there's about 10,000 or more materiel researchers and analysts that the Army leverages, and about 120 to 150 human domain or human dimension researchers or analysts that the Army leans on, primarily in the Army Research Institute. So we recognize there's an imbalance between this priority effort that's emerging in the Army as kind of a centerpiece for the development of Force 2025 compared to our emphasis on materiel. And so that's kind of why we're pushing pushing this particular line of effort. We spent a lot of time talking about what is quality and the traditional measures of quality individual, and how or should we relook those definitions to modernize them and, frankly, to expand them. Right now, as you probably are familiar, quality is pretty much defined by whether or not you're a high school graduate and how well you do on the ASVAB test. But a lot of discussion about opening the aperture in some ways, but being more precise in our identification and selection of individuals to serve by expanding screening into non-cognitive and also more aggressively into physical assessments prior to bringing people on to active duty or even into the reserves. So what you'd have would be a more of a triad of cognitive, non-cognitive, and physical evaluation that would allow us to be more precise in identifying what jobs might be best for you. that was one of the key cornerstones. There's a lot of discussions about the ways we might do that and the, you know, the methods to include cyberkinetics and biomarkers and where all those sorts of technologies were going, and the non-cognitive sciences and how they've expanded and how we might better take advantage of opportunities in that field. So that was kind of the theme of the summit. And for the next one, we're actually going to challenge ourselves a little more broadly. We had some emerging technologies in science that I mentioned in cyberkinetics and biomarkers. That's going to be the theme of the next, or, you know, kind of one of the underlying framework. I don't know about theme, but underlying framework for the next session at IDA. And we may even expand into, you know, DNA sorts of evaluative tools and trying to press ourselves into being as modern and sophisticated as we can. And then the last piece of it is there's a sort of a recognition that we have an industrial age supply and demand model when it comes to acquiring talent. And it's really based on experiential attrition. And that, you know, over time you end up with, we hope, the very best talent that, you know, we can get our hands on. And we realize that that's not a model that's going to work for the future. We need to be, rather than reliant upon large volumes of individuals that come in on the top end, and then, you know, you end up with some smaller number who actually are, you know, make it through their first term of enlistment and stay in the Army. That's not a very good way to acquire talent, and especially when the quality or the supply of that talent that you're looking for is getting smaller. So how do we more precisely identify, select, and attract individuals who want to serve? And the last piece was we opened it up to all the other services. So we had all three Army compos represented, and then we were really pleased that all the other services had representatives there, to include the chief of Air Force recruiting. And then the deputy for the Navy was there. The Marines had representatives, and then, of course, even the Coast Guard. So we were very pleased about that, because many of the challenges that the Army faces in recruiting are common ones faced by all the services. And then the last point I would make is that it was sort of an informal agreement that as the services, we would cooperate more on sharing what research each of the services were backing or initiating, so that we could try and get some commonality of, you know, that research that's more broadly applicable to all the services, and frankly, you know, be a little more effective and efficient with the research dollars that we do have. So those were kind of the big themes in the day and a half or so, nearly 2 days. That's what we worked on. So I don't know if that generates any thoughts or comments or questions from you or not.
Yeah, it generates a lot of questions. Let me pick up on one of your last points about sort of the industrial age model, and I totally get where you're coming from. But to some extent, a manpower intensive service like yours is always going to be about numbers to some extent, right? So what's the right balance between making sure you've got numerically enough people and that you're not bringing in so many that the only purpose of that is to funnel them down into higher quality later down the road?
Yeah, that's a great question. So you're right. You probably answered the question by the way you posed it. There is a balance, and where that striking that balance is, we're not sure just yet. I guess the important point is we're almost wholly reliant on a volume approach currently, and we know we need to be more precise. And some of the reasons why, you know, it's kind of, for one example is physical screening right now. It's kind of binary. You know, I won't say arbitrary, but there is a one-size-fits-all physical determination or screening that you have to get through before you can join the Army. Well, if we want to do lateral accessions and perhaps be a little more sophisticated in the way we acquire and then grow talent, we're going to have to be more flexible in some things like physical screening. You know, does every soldier have to be able to stand in a four-man stack and be able to kick down a door? Perhaps not. You know, the cyber field is a really good example. They're going to have warrior tasks and drills to do just like an infantryman, but they're distinctly different. And so are we flexible enough as an institution to be able to adopt some of our policies and, you know, in the acquisition or the recruiting realm, to take advantage of that talent that's out there who want to serve but can't necessarily today because of some limiting factor, some of which is just self-imposed by us. So I'm straying a little far afield to, you know, amplifying the answer to the question. But the bottom line is, you know, we're almost wholly reliant on this sort of industrial age demand and supply model, and we recognize that we've got to get better than that, and there needs to be some sort of balance. The Army probably faces a little more a challenge in different ways than the other services. You know, we recruit the equivalent of the other three services combined every year. So we have a scope and scale issue that we have to deal with that the other services don't. You know, between the Guard, the Reserves, and the Active, we're going to bring in about 120,000 soldiers every year, even in the face of a downsizing Army. That's a lot of people. That's hiring 10,000 people a month. So, you know, to achieve precision in that kind of an environment is pretty tough challenge, but one that we think we've got to do better at.
That's Major General Alan Batchelet, the commander of Army Recruiting Command. We'll talk more about some of the challenges the Army's thinking about in recruiting a 21st century workforce after our first short break. This is On DoD on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Jared Servian. Back on federalnewsradio.com at 1500 AM, this is On DoD. I'm Jared Serbu, talking this hour about some of the challenges the Army is working through as it thinks about changes to its recruiting process. Our guest is Major General Alan Batchelet, the commander of Army Recruiting Command, who has just hosted a conference at his headquarters at Fort Knox with about 100 recruiting leaders from all five military services. Before the break, he told me the Army would like to focus its recruiting system more on quality and less on quantity than it has in the past. Every year, the Army recruits about 20,000 soldiers more than it might need to, knowing that about a third of them won't finish their first period of enlistment. Back on the quality question, I mean, you and your counterparts in all the other services, I think, basically agree that the quality of the folks that we have right now is higher than it's been in decades. Given that fact, why are you worried right now? I mean, what are the challenges? Are they down-the-road challenges, or are you worried that the high quality that you think you have right now is just not being measured the right way?
Both. So I don't think we're measuring it the right way, and we're not necessarily applying it correctly. So yes, we do have the highest talent coming in to their quality. The way we measure quality today, you're absolutely right. Our Cap 4 rate is like 0.2% right now for the year. I mean, we're nearly 100% high school grads for the Army, and we're well above the 60 percentile threshold, you know, for, on the ASVAB. But we're not necessarily using that talent, applying it once we have it in the Army in the right places. So that's one of our concerns. You know, and then the other part is supply is drying up. So today we're able to afford the talent we need, but when you look at what the Chief of Staff and the Secretary of the Army have called for in their description of Force 2025 and beyond, frankly, the methodologies and tools that we're using today aren't going to allow us to deliver on that vision. They're just inadequate to the task.
And when you look at the challenges you have, I obviously recruiting is your bailiwick, but at conferences like these, are you mostly thinking about just accessions on the front end, or kind of the whole talent management life cycle and
That's another really great question. So previously, and I would say for, you know, and even just in recent memory during these last 10, you know, years of war or so, or in heightened conflicts, the answer is yes, that's what we were doing. We were only focused really on the front end, more specifically. But I can tell you the Army G1 and the ASA MNRA, in fact, we had a follow-on session with Army senior leaders involved in the sessions to include the G1 and Secretary WADA, and we recognized that we've got to take a longer-term view. And so the G1 is doing just that. We don't want to get trapped into focusing on a cyclical, you know, 1 year over year, did you make your mission? It's got to be, you know, you're probably familiar with the statistic that 36, somewhere around 35 to 36% of all first-term soldiers do not complete their first term. I said that more convoluted than it need to be. So about 35% of all soldiers who join the Army will not complete their first term of enlistment. So in order, this year our regular Army mission is 60,000. That 60,000 that we bring in is because we need to keep 40,000 past their first term of enlistment. So that's a pretty inefficient way of acquiring talent. And so the G1 and the ASA MNRA are making efforts right now to expand their perspective and context. So keeping an eye more on the long term rather than this kind of the tyranny of the urgent of this, you know, year-over-year annual mission and that perspective or that approach.
Can you talk more specifically about some of the non-traditional means that you're thinking about, the non-cognitive, the biomarkers, cyberkinetics, all that stuff? How far down the road is all of that as potential tools? Is that sci-fi stuff, or is it ready to implement?
Yeah, no, it's not sci-fi. In fact, the non-cognitive is probably the most mature. You know, you're familiar with TAPAS. Whether or not TAPAS is the, you know, if that's the final form or a form that we use for the future, not sure about that yet. But it is the tool that we are using. We're gathering data on it. Actually, the Army has used it to some good effect already, that, you know, to screen out those individuals who have scored well academically but have personality characteristics that suggest that they wouldn't be effective in the Army. And we think we've reduced first-term attrition by some percentage. It's pretty small at this point, but we think it has been helpful. You know, SOCOM and Army SOF have been using personality, non-cognitive kind of screening tools for a number of years, to good effect. So how do you do that at a larger scale? So I would say the non-cognitive probably shows the most immediate promise. Biomarkers is growing extremely quickly. We had the Pacific Northwest Laboratories were here, and that's going to involve some more research. But I think within a decade, we could be, you know, we already do a little bit of this. If you think about it, drug and alcohol testing is a kind of a crude form of biomarker, right? And we're already doing some of these things. So, you know, taking blood samples to look for certain proteins or lipids that might suggest that, you know, if you're 95 pounds today and 5'2", you might not going to be getting any bigger. That was poor grammar, but those kind of things aren't so far off. And then the cyberkinetics, I don't know if you saw it or not, but just recently there, I guess it was this week, there was a 80-year-old Japanese man who had been paralyzed for nearly his entire life. They put him in a cyber suit, much like Captain America, and he was walking around the room, picking up things, bending over. You know, so the big issue there in cyberkinetics really would be to solve the issue of durability and energy, you know, as far as batteries and that kind of thing to power those sorts of tools. But that's not so far off either. I think within, you know, the next decade and a half, you're going to see things like that. That would really change the way we recruit. If you think about it, one of the things that TRADOC's working on right now is a study about the physicality associated with having females, you know, integrated into combat units. Well, if you're in an exoskeleton of some sort, we don't have to have that discussion anymore. That, to me, is a game-changer kind of thought process.
Interesting. That takes you down some interesting paths, though, doesn't it? I mean, in some ways, I've never served in the military myself, but I've got to imagine that some of the reasons the military services place such a premium on physical fitness is because it's a marker for other things like mental fitness and a drive to succeed and stick-to-itiveness, et cetera. So,
yeah, no, you're exactly right. There's very close correlations to physical fitness. In fact, we had one of the ideas that was introduced during the conference that I'd never thought of is that there's actually associated with cigarette smoking. Now, this, you know, don't quote me on this one because I'm not the expert, but this was introduced that a lack of physical fitness and a reliance on cigarette smoking is often closely related to some sort of psychiatric challenges that an individual might have. I'd never heard that before. You know, that's some sort of the evolving science in the field of psychiatry and psychology that they think that you know, might have been an indicator, might be an indicator that you're coping somehow by self-medicating through, you know, the use of nicotine with other issues. They may not be, you know, huge issues that don't manifest themselves in any real negative way, but there could be that mental, physical association there. So, yeah, those are the kind of things that we were talking about. And it was going to require some really introspection and probably some bold thinking on policies and authorities and, you know, regulation as we move down this path.
So once you implement things like biomarkers and those non-cognitive markers, what do you think you get out of it? Is it mostly just a matter of higher quality accessions and not having to recruit that extra 20,000 people who aren't going to stick around through the first tour?
Yeah, partially, and that's probably the primary thing. But it also would allow you to better place. We're doing a study right now, and we could get this for you, that the Walter Reed folks have done, about using TAPAS to better align individuals into particular jobs. So, you know, today we allow you to, you know, you take a test, and if you qualify for a particular MOS, we let you go into it. They did a really fascinating study that involved motor transport drivers, MPs, infantrymen, and I can't think of the fourth MOS. And they looked at soldiers who attrited from those MOSs, and then they had a baseline of, you know, what does an MP look like in a non-cognitive view? And they lined up test results from infantrymen. I think it was like I shouldn't give you any statistics. We can get you the report.
Sure.
But there were a number of infantrymen that fell out of or didn't complete their first term of enlistment. But interestingly, they had strong indicators that they would have been much more successful as an MP if we would have steered them into, you know, the military police. But now you get into questions of, well, you know, the desire might not be there, right? It's like, hey, I want to be an infantryman. Well, yeah, but all our tests suggest that you would be a better military policeman. Well, okay, thank you for sharing that with me, but I really want to be an infantryman. So, you know, now what do we do? So those are the kind of, in that regard, it's one of the things to think about that we're just beginning to put some thought to. In regards to biomarkers, you know, today, one of the things that it's more than a cursory medical exam, but it's a lot of art associated with medical standards that are published. And so, you know, a doctor at each one of the MEPs applies the art of medicine and, you know, oftentimes has to make a number of subjective calls about whether or not somebody is going to be successful in the Army or not. And even up front, you can do things like, you know, females tend to have lower extremity orthopedic issues at about a 400% higher rate or four times higher rate than males do in basic training. What if you were able to do some sort of, you know, biomarker testing that says, hey, your bone density and, your vitamin D composition and your calcium density is inadequate to the tasks for this particular MOS. And if we put you into that job, we're going to, one, you know, perhaps make a victim out of you, and two, you know, incur a long-term obligation or medical disability for you. There's a particular injury in basic training. I think it's a neck injury that a number of soldiers, and again, I don't have the statistics. It's detectable. We can, you know, today, if we were running these tests, you could identify individuals who are susceptible to that. And if they have that particular injury and they're hurt in basic training, the Army is facing probably about $1 million, workers' comp payment for the rest of that individual's life as a result of that injury in basic training. Those are things that could be avoided. So not only would you get a better selection and assignment process out of it, there's a cost avoidance downstream that could really be beneficial to the services.
Major General Alan Batchelet is the commander of Army Recruiting Command. He'll join us for one more segment after another quick break. This is On DoD on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Jared Serby. Back on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM, this is On DoD. I'm Jared Serbu. Major General Alan Batchelet, the commander of Army Recruiting Command, is with us for one more segment. We've been talking about a conference his service just hosted with about 100 recruiting leaders from across DoD on the types of challenges they're all working through as they try to catch up with the way the rest of the world is thinking about human capital. Batchelet says a lot of aspects of the recruiting process are not up to the task of bringing in the types of soldiers the Army will need in the future, that it's time for the military to rethink the methods it uses to identify quality recruits and find new ways for the military to access talent. So the Navy has sent some proposals up to the Hill to kind of make the career management process a bit more flexible, let people take breaks from the military and move back and forth to the civilian sector, make the promotion process a little bit less rigid. This might be a little out of your lane, but if you had a system like that, would the Army think about using those kinds of authorities? And would it give you a session process that would make the military more attractive to a certain set of people that you want?
Yeah, I think so. So here's the, I know it's being looked on. It is a little out of my lane, but I do have some experience with this because we do this today. And it's not well understood or well known, but, you know, recruiting command, I also recruit. I do 350 OCS sessions a year. And then we bring in all the doctors, the nurses, the veterinarians, chaplains, people like that. And many of those are lateral accessions from professions where someone's already accomplished some, you know, made a career for themselves or started a career for themselves in those fields. And so we have experience doing this today. I mean, we bring in psychiatrists who have been in private practice and commission them. So we have some, you know, background and experience in doing lateral accessions already. And I think there's a great opportunity to build on that. We act like we don't ever do those sorts of things when in practice we've been doing them for many, many years.
Right, but it might make sense for something like cyber in addition, right?
Absolutely, right, exactly right. So I guess I get just a little, it's an education and information kind of thing. It was like, wait a minute, we're not completely ignorant about how to do lateral accessions or civil life gains. We often talk to them about, we talk about it as a civil life gain. We know how to do that. Now, admittedly, on a very small scale, but I think some of the lessons and the practices that we're already engaged in for those sorts of those sorts of approaches, we could build on pretty quickly if we can come to the agreement on how to do it and what we're looking for.
So quickly back to the mismatch that you mentioned between sort of the research capacity between materiel and the human capital enterprise.
Right.
What are you doing right now to get after that, to build the human capital side?
Yeah, so one of the truth be told, probably not a lot, at least immediately, but what, you know, to solve any problem is to first recognize you have a problem. So we've done that. And then the services, one of the things that came out of this particular engagement, where all the services agreed, at least at the accessions, recruiting command level, where the research dollars that we do have available to us, which aren't insignificant. I mean, there's money available for us to do research. We all have agreed now to cooperate better and identifying which topics need to be addressed. OSD had representation at the summit too, by the way. The OSD PNR had their sessions policy folks were there.
Mm-hmm.
Stephanie Miller, she's newly appointed, and with Chris Arndt, we're in the room. And so that's the next step, is for all of us to at least informally at first collaborate on research topics and better focus or use the money that we do have available to us, and then we'll see what results from that effort. We think we've got some momentum growing in the focus on accessions. We've come to realize maybe too late. Well, I think it's not really too late, but we've come to realize that the Army might be the best leader developers in the world, but everyone has limited potential, right? And so it matters who you bring in. We can be really good at developing people and leaders, but we all have finite. But I think the other kind of analogy I use is I'm only 5'8" and 5'9", maybe, if I'm lucky. I'm never dunking a basketball, right? So it's never going to happen. I don't care how you can bring in the best performance trainers in the world, and I am never going to be able to do that.
The raw material matters.
That's right. The raw material matters. So we've come to realize that we've got to put more emphasis on identification, attraction, and selection of the right raw material to deliver that result that the chief has called for Force 2025.
Major General Alan Batchelet is the commander of Army Recruiting Command. He talked with us by phone from a conference he just hosted with recruiting leaders from the other four military services at Fort Knox, Kentucky. Again, the Army wants to make that thought leadership event a recurring exercise. The next one is scheduled for December at the Institute for Defense Analyses here in the Washington area. One more break, and when we come back, we will hear some views about the need to reform the broader military personnel system, not just recruiting, from Brad Carson, the Acting Undersecretary of Defense for Personnel and Readiness. This is On DoD on FederalNewsRadio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Jared Serbia. Back on FederalNewsRadio.com and 1500 AM. It's On DoD. I'm Jared Serbu. Thanks for listening. As we close out the show this week, we'll stick with the topic of rethinking the way the military manages its personnel. But as we transition from our conversation with Major General Alan Batchelet, the commander of Army Recruiting Command, we'll hear a broader view now about not just the recruiting process, but the overall military personnel system, which DoD leaders are now saying needs significant changes for the first time in half a century. We're going to play a few minutes of audio from DoD personnel leaders who spoke at an event here in Washington hosted by Defense One, starting with Brad Carson, who's both the Undersecretary of the Army and the Acting Undersecretary of Defense for Personnel and Readiness. Carson says the way the military manages both its enlisted and officer personnel is in urgent need of reform.
The time is long past due. We have a personnel system that is antiquated, that is almost Soviet in its intensity, that hasn't fundamentally changed in 70 years at a time when around us, especially in the last 20 years, organizations have shown great dynamism, where human resources has evolved from checking the box or about compliance or about mindless adherence to the rules to actually a strategic partner to top leaders. And the Department of Defense has never made this transition along with the rest of the world.
You're accusing the military of mindless adherence to the rules?
No, I mean, the rules serve a purpose and have served a purpose. But like many things in a bureaucracy, they outlive their usefulness. And because we have a certain monopoly on the use of violence, the Department of Defense, we're not fraught with competitive pressures that mandate we change our ways. And so it's about senior leaders coming in and saying we have to change to be better. And that's what it's really all about, both on the civilian side, on the military side. And there is a desperate need, a need recognized by think tanks, by academics, by many people in this room, by junior officers. This is well recognized. It's now just taken a while to have kind of a catalyst at the top of the Department of Defense and Secretary Ash Carter, who wants to make it a priority. I mean, I think the first thing we have to do is enable the Department of Defense and the people who care about the department to have this conversation in a better way. Right now, if you have a discussion, let's think about the military personnel system for a moment, and you ask the questions that I do naively. As I often say, every room I am in talking about these matters, I know less than nearly every other single person there. They have spent careers working on personnel issues. If they're active duty or from the reserves, they have lived under this regime. So they know it well, they know its intricacies, they know where it succeeds and where it fails. So my role is to ask the naive questions, the primitive ones, such as, you know, how do we identify our top 10% of our officers, of our enlisted personnel? How do we go about doing that? Can we do that today? And the answer is we really can't do that. If we ask, what's the best commissioning source? Which officers from what particular commissioning source do the best over time? Can we answer that question readily? We can't. If we ask, well, how's the retention rate on some of these crucial technical disciplines that will be necessary for a 21st century fighting force? Signal, cyber, engineers, these kind of areas. Can we easily say we know what's going on in those communities? And the answer is no. Now, the data is there. We collect vast hordes of data about our personnel. But it's never assimilated into a dashboard where senior leaders can look at it and say, like, I understand where we're trying to go and I see the problems in it. So that's the first thing we can do. The second then, after identifying possible problems, is looking at what internal flexibilities we have and then talking about what kind of legislative or regulatory change that we might need down the way. So there's a number of efforts going on here. But it starts by trying to be able to have a coherent conversation, and that's often difficult when discussing personnel.
This sounds like you're at the very beginning, then, of before any changes are coming.
We're at the very beginning, but it's a short fuse. So I promised the Secretary of Defense I would report out to him by August 19th. So we're in the sixth week of a three-month process. The Secretary and I only have 18 months remaining in office, which, you know, many people who've worked around the Department of Defense will say that's too short a time to actually come up with great ideas, much less implement them. But that is an indictment of our system, right, after all, because if you go out to the private sector, I mean, if you come from the private sector, 18-month development time is a long time. The clock speed of business is much more rapid than that. And so the notion that we can't prototype a new personnel system in 3 months, especially after all the work that's been done over the last decade or two by people who've thought deeply about the matter, and then spend another year, year and a half trying to implement it, I said, we have to do that. And that is not rapid by the standards of anything other than a government bureaucracy. I think it goes back to perhaps my indictment of the system, which is inflexible, inefficient, inequitable today. People have short careers, they have short tenure in a particular jobs given to them. And so specialization meaning, you know, if someone wants to be a major for 20 years doing cyber, or 40 years doing cyber, right now that is not permitted by both statute and internal department regulation. We should envision a world where that might be possible and where services are free to experiment with it. Not every service will avail themselves of those kind of authorities, but some would readily do so. And that's not is what's not possible today. And because you're meeting, I mean, what we see seemingly, and this is the problem that I've seen closely in the Army, because I'm the Undersecretary of the Army as well, just which I have been for the last year. You see this pervasively, but it's true in all the services where, you know, you're rapidly moving from assignment to assignment, a year and a half at most, barely time enough to get the depth you want in that job because we have such a premium on breadth. We have to rotate people through rapidly because you have to get your both command, your key developmental assignment, you have to go to school. If you get off that treadmill, your promotion chances are dimmed considerably. This notion that we can be more flexible, that people can specialize, that not everyone has to be on a track to be a flag officer, that careers can be longer, that you don't have to be promoted at major at 11 years plus or minus one, but you might instead move from this time-based management to a competency-based one, where you promoted to major when you hit key milestones. You went to school, you got your degree, you did this command, you did this key developmental assignment. Perhaps you took time off to go to 3 or 4 years to graduate school, and you can get back on. This is the ambition, is to move from this kind of rigid time-based management system we have today that puts people on a treadmill that you get off at your own detriment to one that's competency-based, one more talent-based. That's the aspiration.
Again, that's Brad Carson, the acting Undersecretary of Defense for Personnel and Readiness, speaking at an event hosted by Defense One. Also at that event, Roy Wallace, the Army's Assistant Deputy Chief of Staff for Personnel, who says that if the military is going to make smarter decisions about managing its people, it needs to do a much better job of integrating the stovepipe data systems that make up its personnel IT system.
No one will discount that we need to make some changes, that we need to evolve over time. But there's a couple of things I've learned in the last 37 years. To do this, you need data. You have to see yourself. I have my pay system is 30 years old, 7 million lines of COBOL code that's undocumented. You have to dig people up out of the graveyard to reprogram it, okay? My personnel systems, 53 of them. I'm working on a little thing called IPSA, which is an integrated pay and personnel system. Right now I'm driving a Yugo, and what I need is a Maserati for the future. And as we're moving through that, the trouble is getting everybody on board. I've got a mark in the SASC and in the SAC of $50 million and a order to reorganize the program. That will set me back 2 years. My first target is the National Guard to bring them out of the 1965 technology that they're using today. I need to see them because as I bring the United States Army active component down from a high of 565,000 soldiers, and really at that time we really had 710,000 soldiers on active duty when we were fighting Iraq and Afghanistan at the same time, I have got to be able to get in there and see where I am. so that I can do the things that we're talking about here, so that I can make sure that I understand who my top 10 percenters are. And oh, by the way, I would disagree. When the Army releases people out into the world, they become captains of industry. And that's good for the Department of Defense writ large as we're going through these things. So there's goodness in the rotation. The other thing I have to watch is my Corps is a young infantryman out on point somewhere on a FOB in Afghanistan. He doesn't have a huge technological draw like a cyber guy or anything like that. And you have to be real careful that you don't disenfranchise the centerpiece of your formation that's out there sweating and bleeding on the cutting edge. We need cyber guys too, because we need to know where the bad guys are out there and how to get after them. But I also need that infantryman on the ground. So it's a delicate balance as you walk through the personnel minefield that we have today. And you have to make sure, number one, you can see yourself, and number two, that you've got the right focus on what you're doing.
Again, that's Roy Wallace, the Army's Assistant Deputy Chief of Staff for Personnel. Just before him, you heard from Brad Carson, who's both the Undersecretary of the Army and the Acting Undersecretary of Defense for Personnel and Readiness. Both of them speaking at an event hosted by Defense One here in the Washington area called The Force of the Future, focused on reforming the military personnel system to make it more agile and more flexible. Our guest for most of the hour this week was Major General Alan Batchelet, the commander of Army Recruiting Command, who talked with us about making the Army's recruiting process more agile. He spoke with us by phone from the site of an academic conference on recruiting the Army just hosted at Fort Knox, Kentucky. If you missed that conversation, we'll post this week's entire show, as always, at federalnewsradio.com/ondod. That's going to do it for this week's program. Glad you could join us. I'm Jared Serbia. So long.
You've been listening to On DoD with Federal News Radio DoD reporter Jared Serbu. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. On DoD, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.